Good day, South Dakota, and welcome to Tech Radio featuring the Computer Guys. I'm your host, Ken Osborne. On today's program, has the privacy market reached critical mass? We'll talk about that today. We'll talk about the implications of the first robotic car to drive across the U.S. and my latest want, the Leatherman Tread. Also, if we have time, talk about browser extensions, plugins, and add-ons, what those are and why those could help you or how those could help you in the future. And of course, we'll take your questions. You can email midday@sdpb.org or send a tweet to @sdpb. Join the discussion on our Facebook page at facebook.com/techradio or call now 800-456-0766. All that and more coming up after this news from SDPB Radio. Welcome back to Tech Radio, featuring the Computer Guys. We've gathered the experts to help guide you on a variety of areas you may have questions about. The experts are here in the studio of KCSD in Sioux Falls. Joel Brovelite's walking in the door right now. John T. Myers here. Hello, John.
Hello.
And, of course, Amos Asip is joining us today as well. Hang on, Amos. I'm going to turn your microphone up.
Hey, how you doing?
Still working on it.
Still here.
Yeah, there you are.
Hello.
Still working on turning your microphone
up.
Great day out there in Sioux Falls. Of course, it's Good Friday.
It's actually kind of cold. I mean, I know where it's
relatively
like spring, and, yeah, and you know we're getting soft skin already, but it's really windy. But
Passover starts tonight.
It's if you're celebrating Passover, maybe you don't know what that is.
I'm sure if you're celebrating Passover, you know.
I would hope so.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. Well, anyway, we have a technology show to worry about today, and it's not a worry. It's actually a good thing. I've got all kinds of things to talk about.
You're already getting some love for the mustache goatee here on the Periscope live chat. So
that's great. Again, we're Periscoping
now
today.
We're doing Periscope.
So what happened to Meerkat?
So a year from now, we'll either laugh at this, and one of these two apps will probably be mainstream, or we'll laugh because none of them will be. Who knows?
Or they'll both be bought by Twitter.
So, well, Periscope already was.
So
the last 2 weeks, or last two shows on Tech Radio, we've live streamed on Meerkat, taking questions and getting a little behind the scenes. So what it looks like here in the studio during an episode of Tech Radio, which has gone well. In the hubbub of Meerkat, you know, at South by Southwest, kind of being the app of South by Southwest, then Twitter kind of announced that they had already acquired back in January an app called Periscope that was kind of under wraps and then went live last week, I think it was. So since between our last episode. So I thought this time we would stream on Periscope. Pretty much same idea, built mm-hmm. on Twitter. You turn your phone into a live broadcasting camera. We have folks watching right now, people asking questions. Joel Glick says Periscope is much better, but that would make sense since he's on Periscope.
Okay. You know, yeah, here's the deal that struck me about Periscope. Of course, I downloaded it right away. And after I recovered my Apple ID for the 15th time in the last month, I'm not going to talk to you about that right now. But anyway, and it says, hey, your friend Kevin Dando is live from Japan. And I'm like, this is really cool. And I click on the notification and it opens up Periscope. And here's a video of the guy 9 hours ago doing his thing. And it's like, well, this isn't really live. This is just a recorded thing of him being live in Japan 9 hours ago.
We have someone from upstate New York here, and also someone, what did he say? Where was that?
So
from
I wonder.
Europe. Someone's watching from Europe.
Oh, that's very cool.
So
I'll come visit someday. So can you turn the notifications to the point where it is just sending you live stuff, or is it going to constantly be feeding me with archives? Because this,
story? Where would you do this?
Well, I was
because
you know.
I mean, you get a notification if someone you follow on Periscope goes live,
right?
But then, if by the time you get there, if it's over, it's
this
gone.
Was 9 hours ago. This was 9 hours previous that the guy did his live gig, and I just got the notification, and I guess and then I went, well, this is you know, I can go to YouTube and look at videos that are 9 hours old, but
well, just in a troubleshooting mode here. Did you download it and then 9 hours later launch it and maybe it was an old notification? Is that possible?
I just got the notification on my phone sitting at
the... Sure. Right after you downloaded it or...
Nah, I don't think so.
You don't think it was right
probably
after?
Probably a couple of days, maybe.
There you go. I'm sure it was probably an old notification.
Oh, all right.
That maybe you clicked the link to. And it looked like it was a new notification.
Okay.
That's my guess.
Because
We'd have to have more information to answer your question, actually.
Too bad that guy's not here today.
Either way, I just think it's an interesting trend right now, which I think in the end, it's too early to call. I think there's already articles saying Meerkat's the winner or Meerkat's dead, Periscope's the winner.
I think the answer is streaming video from Twitter.
Exactly,
the
idea of streaming live video.
And not even necessarily from Twitter, to be honest. Just from your phone?
Well,
just the idea that you can kind of do on... I mean, and the really funny part is, I mean, you were able to stream live video 10 years ago, even longer, I think, from an IP.
Sure.
Even from a, consumer device. However, what these new things have done, these new apps and platforms have done, is made it scalable and really easy for the user to do. I mean, you don't have to, sign up for a whole bunch of stuff. You don't have to make sure your IP is right. You don't have to make sure that if 5,000 people log on, you have to have the bandwidth for it. You don't have to do any of that. So I really see this like in a not very long to be, like Jimmy Fallon used Meerkat, where he live streamed a rehearsal. You'll be able to do that from anywhere. And, of course, monetizing it, maybe you can charge for a stream. I think it's just really going to be a big deal in not very long.
And he crashed Meerkat, didn't he? When he did that.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he's not the only one. I mean, those are the growing pains. It was just very, very cool to see that utilized.
It's neat to see the kinks being
worked
out.
Like that, yeah.
So does this record your session and save that automatically then, which is something Meerkat doesn't do?
So they both have the ability. It's a little bit more natural in Periscope, where you can rebroadcast it, whereas in Meerkat you save it to your phone. You'd then have to upload it to some type of video player like a YouTube or something like that. So I think it's cool. We do not have Jimmy Fallon's following here at Tech Radio, but we can give the same experience. We can take questions here. We can do behind the scenes. And
we've been at it longer, though.
Oh, yeah, we have.
Yeah,
we were way before Jimmy.
Right, of course.
I think the show does predate... you asked when...
It probably predates Jimmy Fallon. You can just probably say that. As a human being.
I remember first video streaming back in 98, 99. Seriously, video streaming. But then, if you remember the whole Real Player fiasco, I mean, Real was the company. If you were streaming video... You were going to a real
or
server.
Audio. I think audio.
Yeah, audio too.
Is what we were doing. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
And then the whole spyware and all that stuff on your or adware on the player kind of a thing, and everybody was uninstalling, and then things just kind of got goofy for a while, and eventually we emerged today. Like you say, it's the whole scalability thing is there now. It wasn't back then. Mm-hmm. You put more than 50 people on your webcast and you were crashing things.
Oh yeah, easily. Yeah,
it was a crazy time. But now Comcast is talking about fiber to the home. Now by the end of 2015, a majority of their subscribers can get 2 gig now, 2 gig down. That's some crazy bandwidth. Which is the first thing that when I mentioned Periscope and Meerkat to somebody, they said, "Man, doesn't they eat up a lot of your data plan?"
It's surprising how it's a lot of data, but it's not really as much data as if you're streaming HD video from say Netflix or something. While it's a lot, it's pretty compressed and a pretty small footprint for what it really is. And of course, what really allows us to do this is the behind the scenes scalability, because even 5 years ago you had to pay thousands of dollars a month just for the bandwidth to host 100 people on a webcast, or 1,000 people, and now John can do it and doesn't cost him a dime.
Yep, absolutely.
It still does cost a lot of money,
It doesn't cost that much money. It doesn't even cost that much money for a company like Periscope or the costs have gone down.
You've got YouTube and the free video streaming mode now as well.
Sure,
you can get in there and light up a live webcast on YouTube, and it's free.
And to be honest, the one player I think people aren't talking about in kind of this Meerkat versus Periscope debate is Snapchat. I mean, it wouldn't be hard for Snapchat to just turn what they already do with pictures and short videos to turn it live. And when they already have a global, you know, user base.
Well, that's the beauty of these things. If we'd have talked a year ago and said, well, streaming video over the internet, I'm like, yeah, well, you can do that now. That's not going to be a big deal. But it's, you know, if you put it in the right mode, make it accessible and get it out to the right people, you know, all the tools can be there. And all you need to do is just you as an app maker or a platform or a startup, you just need to take advantage of those tools and get them to the right people. And, you know, bam, all of a sudden you're going to get bought by Twitter for a bajillion dollars.
That's crazy, the cash going on out there. So you can call, tweet, or text your email questions today. Or simply swing by our Facebook page. I posted a story earlier about the bracelet that I was talking to you about from, it's called Tread from Leatherman. Put a picture of that out there and a link to that that product page at facebook.com/techradio is where you can get a hold of that. You can post your comments there. If you have questions for the show today, we'll be monitoring that, and don't be shy. Also, our phone number is an 800 number, 800-456-0766. If you would like to give us a call today, you're more than welcome to do that. You want to tweet us, at SDPB is the easiest way to do that. Get on Twitter and send us your question or comment. And if you prefer email, we do that as well. That's probably the most popular way of getting hold of us. Midday, M-I-D-D-A-Y, midday at SDPB.org. Well, guys, we have a few topics we want to talk about today if we've left Periscope and Meerkat in the dust. One last question. Is there an app you prefer? You've used Periscope now. You've used Meerkat. Is it make really any difference?
I think I'm a little more loyal to Meerkat just because I started using that one first.
It was the first time.
And I like the community there. But Periscope's really slick. There's some benefits to being acquired by Twitter and having a few more kind of integration there. But yeah. I think TBD, I'm just playing with them both, checking them out, but I'd say Meerkat thus far.
They All Tech considered, a subsidiary, of course, of NPR,
yep.
Calls Meerkat the app of the moment. So they're testing it now and trying new things out, and of course,
and that's the challenge, to be more than just a moment, to be more than just a blip.
They choose their words very wisely there at NPR. I wish I could do that as well. Anyway, we're back to Tech Radio here and taking questions and calls. We will take a quick break when we come back. A couple of topics I want to talk about. We'll talk about that Leatherman Tread where I just mentioned. Browser functionality is there that, yeah, you're sneering at me, but there's a lot of, you're not, okay. You're wondering what I'm talking about here. There's plugins, extensions, and add-ons that you can use in your browser to change not only the look, but things it can do for you. And I don't think a lot of people know about that, so we're going to talk about that on the show today, as well as robotic cars driving across the U.S. and a whole bunch of other things and whatever else is floating around in the minds of the folks in the studio here or in the audience. Again, the phone number, 1-800-456-0766, is open to you, as well as the at SDPB Twitter handle. We'll be back right after this.
You guys were not as impressed with that as I thought
you were. Doing left magic tricks here during commercial break.
We're back to Tech Radio. And during the break, we had a little additional content for the Periscope viewers, but you welded two pieces of plastic
together.
Yeah, it's
the stuff I was hip to. It's called Bondic. And what it is it's a kind of borrowing from the dental community. No, I've never had this done, but apparently to do quick fixes, they will put this, what amounts to UV-activated glue on your teeth, and then they shine a UV light or ultraviolet light on it.
Yeah, my dad is an orthodontist in
Brookings. So he probably knows about this.
And when you put your braces on, they shine that little blue light. It's the exact same technology, yeah.
That's what this is. And they don't call it a glue. It's a plastic weld, and it basically works on metal, glass. They use it to fix phones, I guess. So if your phone falls and cracks, quick fix, you just put it on there, activate it the UV light, and it's waterproof and permanent. You can sand it, layer it, finish it. It's amazing. It's kind of expensive, about $20 for this whole thing here, tube of it.
But you're holding like a 5-inch
Yeah, it must be about like flashlight an ounce or a 3/4 of an ounce.
Looks like an EpiPen, really.
Yeah, right.
A, with a light with a little key light on the end.
Yeah, that's a good way to say it.
So, but yeah, it's pretty amazing stuff. I fixed a couple of things that toys actually that were my kids that I had around, and I tried to fix with super glue, but super glue, of course, just holds things together really well. It doesn't really bridge gaps. You know, you can't use it as a weld. So I was hip to this, and it's pretty amazing stuff.
You're hip to this.
Hipped.
That's hipped to it.
So does that work better with a thinner type of a plastic or something thicker?
I've used it to fix plastic that I would say is like half a mil. Like I said, they use it to fix phones, cracked screens on phones. And I think if it gets too deep, you're supposed to layer it. And then if you layer it, you can kind of sand it off depending on what you're trying to fix.
So now is your daughter just breaking toys and you're just fixing them? And...
Yeah, right. Exactly. And it holds water, too. I fixed a plastic cup that my daughter had created in art class.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually broken by me. That's quite the story. And then it held water. I was amazed with it. So.
Well, I want to remind folks about our Facebook page again, facebook.com/techradio. You can go there now and see any stories that we've posted over the previous couple of weeks. A little call out to next show, April 17th, is that special show we talked about. We're going to help folks with off-air reception of television, moving their viewing to alternative platforms, possibly saving some money every month. But we'll focus on that show. Those types of activities, the cutting the cord type activities, on April 17th. Made everybody smile by saying that, didn't I? Everybody's like, how's Kent going to talk around this?
You didn't want to use that word.
Want to use that word, but I went ahead and did it anyway. We have some, we didn't get to on the last show, the ability in browsers to do things from changing the theme, which is, seems somewhat esoteric, but people kind of like that, changing to a dark theme or a lighter theme or whatever. The reason I got kind of interested in letting people know about this is a couple of weeks ago, there's a new extension came out for Chrome called Ugly Mail. And it sounds bad, but it's a good thing in that, and Amos, you kind of shook your head earlier when I mentioned this, there some email companies embed a pixel size, basically photograph or image or whatever in an email that they send to you. And because of the way that email clients work, if the email client requests to download that image, which you can't see, it's just 1 pixel by 1 pixel and it's usually transparent, they know where you're coming from to make that request. Those servers for that pixel sized photograph see that request coming into the web server and can timestamp you. They know when you're there and from where you're coming from and gather apparently other things as well.
Right.
So this extension tells you there's 3 major companies that do this service for people. And they'll track that and let you know if that mail that's coming in has that tracking thing. So obviously you can not open it or do whatever.
There are some ways that for instance, Gmail will stop that from happening. Will stop you from having those pixels show up if it comes from a third party, vendor or what have you. And a lot of this is not nefarious. And this actually the pixel tracking's been around for years and years and years and years. There are applications, for instance, Outlook, if you're using that and it says that the pictures have been blocked in this to prevent tracking, that's exactly what it's doing. Gmail does the same thing. But if you're using some other mail client that doesn't have that facility in it, then you can use those extensions to add that on.
Is the whole privacy thing since Snowden and others really sort of made people more aware of things like this?
In my previous life, I worked in security, and so it became something that was very interesting to me. But I did find myself actually just yesterday thinking about what we do online and how far it can be tracked because of the news story of the co-pilot from the Germanwings airplane.
Okay,
so
sure.
We're talking about all of the things that he's previously searched online. And so, you know, that got me thinking, are they doing that simply because they have access to his computer and they got on and they just looked at the drop-down list of previous searches? Did they do that because in your Google search history, you can actually go back into it and see everything that you've ever searched ever since Google's been tracking that? But then they would have to have access to that. And how did they get Google to give that access to them? And maybe they didn't. I don't know what their source of the information was. But it gets you to wonder, you know, how right now my information is protected by at minimal a password. But you know, how far should you go to keep that information from either A, being stored, or B, accessible by other people? And what tools and facilities are there available to do that?
So there was just really recently, the most recent Pew Research Center report out was about privacy, online privacy. And they say, you know, Americans are about 50-50 on the, you know, whether or not to be really concerned about things like massive government surveillance or other things. But they're saying that there's, you know, 25%. The thing that caught their attention was 25% said they've changed how they use online technology either a great deal or somewhat recently. And that, you know, leads to people saying things like, I don't search for some things that I used to, you know, quite as much, or I don't joke about things that could be taken potentially as a threat anymore, which is, you know, I guess probably not really a big surprise to everybody. But there are companies now that in that niche market for privacy tools that could possibly go mainstream because there's more people looking for them. Mm-hmm. It isn't such a niche market anymore.
No.
So I don't know if you heard Wickr, Destructs, any of those kind of companies. Have you become a client of any of those?
You know, I haven't gotten myself to be quite that paranoid yet. But that being said, I've also led the type of technological lifestyle that I have never actually purchased an antivirus either. It's one of those things where if you are familiar with the inner workings of how these systems work, mm-hmm. You can avoid that stuff without having to use the software. You can avoid viruses without having to use antivirus. You can avoid being tracked without having to use anti-tracking software. But that being said, you know, there are times where a person could accidentally stumble into something. There's times where maybe someone else is using your computer. Or maybe there's simply a new technology out there that you haven't discovered or you don't know about yet. And unfortunately, you fall into that pit before you become aware.
Yeah, and you're obviously the minority for the person
right,
who understands
absolutely.
How everything
absolutely.
Works.
Yeah,
or
you know, or somebody really just wants to get at your stuff, yours in particular,
right.
And then, you know, there's almost no hope.
Right.
You know, if somebody wants your stuff, not any stuff, but your stuff, there's just really no way around that. They're going to get your stuff.
Yeah, if you're targeted,
yeah.
Boy, yeah, there's not much you can do other than just shut everything
yeah,
off.
Just, yeah, you gotta yeah. Go, yeah, you got to go native.
Unplug.
And start
right.
Eating out of cans and stuff.
Right.
So there's different types of these services. So there's like self-destructing tools for email and social media posts. And then this is the one that I find kind of interesting. It's sort of like I would reckon this to a like a Carbonite for backups. This is a company you can subscribe to, and they promise you zero digital footprint. So you run...
You mean Carbonite?
No. I was saying
okay.
like Carbonite is to backing up.
Oh, I see.
This company is to like online privacy. Mm. So you subscribe a monthly subscription, I am assuming, or yearly subscription to a service. You use the product and it guarantees you zero digital footprint.
Isn't this the premise of Snapchat? And didn't we just find out that that's not actually true?
Mm. Well, Snapchat's just social media. I think you're talking about like... Covering all your stuff, right?
But the
all
idea,
the things.
Oh, sure. But the idea of Snapchat was the fact that a picture goes away after the 3 seconds you allow it to exist. But
listen,
we know that data is data.
I totally agree
somewhere.
With Amos. I think anybody that thinks anything is foolproof,
right.
Or guaranteed, no matter what that anything
it's stored
is,
somewhere.
You're fooling yourself.
And whether it's stored somewhere and blatantly accessible, or it's stored somewhere and just not indexed, but you know through
sure.
recovery purposes, you could pull it off of that drive.
But yeah, it's there somewhere. In the tech space, whether it be Snapchat or even the Meerkat example, this if having ephemeral type of content, stuff mm-hmm. that just kind of disappears into the ether, became very popular. But as you note, is it truly gone?
Well, and usually in all of those cases, the choke point or the real problem is not the software. It's almost always the user whose password is, their dog's name or their daughter or, their favorite color or 123456 or whatever. Or they leave their phone in the bar and it doesn't have a lock on it or any number. Those are almost always the real problems with security.
Right.
Yeah. So the big debate, of course, is not the fact that we all know that public and private companies are stockpiling this amazing amount of data. It's kind of the encryption now that people are really kind of butting their heads over. So some encryption is getting certified as having no NSA backdoor, things in it. And then when you do that, of course, the government isn't real happy about not having a backdoor into the data.
Well, and I think that really the good news is, because there is good news, is it's now becoming more important to the consumer, and it's also getting the notoriety in governments. So there's a lot of talk about it, and there are companies right now doing research and making security easier and more accessible. The whole password ridiculousness that everybody has. 3,000. I'm probably not making that up. Probably have 3,000 passwords if you use the internet regularly that you have to remember. And of course, what you really do is you use the same 7 or 4 or 3 or 1 for all of them, which is totally unsafe. So we're going to have ways around that. Things like biometrics, like the fingerprint on computers and iPhones and iPads. We're going to see more of that, and it's going to become easier for people to protect their data from the kind of skim off the top that we're talking about. Again, I find it very difficult to believe that if somebody's actually targeting you, that your stuff is really actually going to be safe.
True.
But that's the world we live in now.
I'll have to count up my passwords one of these days, but I do know just some of them. It fills an entire printed page in the smallest font you can possibly put on.
Oh, so you have them all written out?
Oh, good.
On a piece of paper? Listening audience?
And yes. Now you just told the world.
Not safe. Not safe. It's like the it's like War Games, if you remember that old movie.
One password.
Where the teacher reaches out and pulls the thing out, and it's the long list of passwords. And
I've got
they're all crossed out, and it says pencil. Is the next password?
I had to.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think
my browser was going.
Truth be told, most people out there probably have something similar.
My browser was keeping it.
I know somebody who keeps maybe even a worse version of that. They keep a text file on their computer with all the passwords, which seems backwards.
I shouted one password, and I don't mean using one password. I mean using a product called 1Password, which. You remember a passphrase, like a longer sentence, mm-hmm. or I'm sure, Amos, you know this, a series of words that once you unlock it, then it stores all of these really difficult, 25 character letters, numbers, underscore
mm-hmm.
Type of passwords. It's a really great product. I highly recommend it. There's a free trial, and then I think it's $39 lifetime. It's not like a subscription. You pay it once.
Mm-hmm.
Chrome, Safari extensions, regardless of which browser you use, it autofill your password. You just have to remember that 1Password to unlock it.
So does it, when you subscribe to a new service, does it pick the username and the password then, and it just, you don't even have to know what it is?
You can click it and say, generate one for me, and it'll be 25 characters long. You'll never remember it. You just have to remember that phrase.
This interests me. But anyway,
I'll put it in the on our Facebook page.
Not in defense of what I said, but to explain what I said, the printout was from a browser that was doing crazy things, and I needed to uninstall it, and it had a bunch of my passwords in it. And you can just go in there, and if you don't have a password on your passwords in your browser, anybody can walk up to your browser and go, yeah, let's go look at the security tab and look at passwords, and then there's all the passwords you've used on that browser. They're all sitting in there.
Depends on the browser, of course.
Well, of course. It depends on the browser. But the two that I use, they're just sitting there. Hopefully they're encrypted and they're in a file somewhere. But if you've got access to that computer and that browser, you can just go in there and rummage around in the passwords. So anyway, I ended up printing that out, uninstalling the browser just to make sure that I didn't lose all those passwords that I can't remember. You know, like you say, you've got various, you know, Twitter, social media accounts and emails and web services that you subscribe to, from photo sharing to whatever. And, of course, we keep repeating this on the show, never use the same password twice, and that starts adding up. And anyway, on the personal side, I use LastPass is the company I use.
Yeah, same idea.
And they just came out with an Apple App Store app that has a free trial after so many days you need to purchase it, but the rest of it's free.
I mean, the biometrics is where it gets super slick. So if you use the 1Password app on your phone,
mm-hmm. and you have the fingerprint,
and then you just do you have the newest iPhone or the last two versions of the iPhone, you just have to use the fingerprint, which is so slick.
And does it work with the Apple constantly nagging me to log into the iCloud and the iTunes and the iWhatever for passwords and stuff? Does it work with that?
It'll store any password you want.
Oh, this is going to be well worth the money.
I mean, LastPass is the same thing, from my understanding. I don't know if you're using LastPass.
Just downloaded the app the other day. Haven't really had a chance to try it on the iOS devices, but
the two are the biggest competitors, I think.
As a plugin or a browser extension. I don't even know what the difference is between a plugin, an extension, and an add-on in a browser, but they're all there. I use LastPass as one of those. It's one of those things in my browser, and it takes care of my browsing things, but it does not, you know, I haven't used it on my mobile stuff yet, but I will. And I'm going to look into one more time.
1Password.
1Password. It's like I'm like number one direction.
The password. Put it on the Facebook page. So.
Yeah. Oh, great. We're coming up to another break. But when we come back, we've got, of course, lots more things to talk about. Do you have anything from the web feed that we need to talk about?
Yeah. No, we've gone pretty quiet on the Periscope front.
They're in deep dive, huh?
Yeah.
Periscope, down Periscope and deep diving out there on the internet. Anyway, we'll be discussing more things. We're going to talk again about that Leatherman tread and the robotic car that drove across the U.S. recently when we come back after this. Back to Tech Radio.
I don't even worry about the break anymore. I just talk through it.
Tim Ferriss has a YouTube video. We're responding to the ad that we just heard about hard boiled eggs, but his trick is for peeling them, not necessarily making them, but you know how you gotta get all the little shells.
Fleck the pellet.
He has a 2-minute YouTube video where he opens up a little hole and then he blows air into it and the whole shell just falls right off.
That makes sense.
That's crazy.
Kind of a life hack for your hard-boiled eggs.
You can put a little vinegar in the water, too, and that mm-hmm. softens the shell a bit, makes that a bit easier, too.
I'm going to definitely listen to Ira, see what he's got to say, and take this all into consideration while making the deviled eggs for this weekend, for Easter.
Oh, the things you learn on the show.
Absolutely. And you're going to get that YouTube video for me, right? And send
sure,
it to
I'll
me?
Get it. Okay, yeah,
great.
Let's
we'll
do
share
it.
That. We'll share that with everybody, just in case you get nothing more out of this show than some cooking tips today. I'm going to be okay with that. I really am. So Delphi drove a car, or the Delphi car drove itself across the U.S. recently. And while some folks say, well, you know, anybody could have done, Google could have probably pulled that off. Or
already has.
But
they just haven't said anything. I have no doubt about that.
Okay. Well, yeah.
They
you
say
know.
They've gone a couple hundred miles, I know. They've admitted, at least.
They just didn't want to get in trouble.
They picked a route this winter that avoided the snow, of course, and they only did it during the day. But the car, unless they were in an urban setting in a city, drove it from California to New York, and it drove itself, pretty much. And, you know, so this mind-blowing to me is I always thought that, well, if we're going to have cars driving themselves, then there's going to, you know, the transportation system, like the people that make the highways are going to have to, I don't know, embed some things in the concrete every now and then, or, you know, there was going to be some external thing that's going to need to happen before this could possibly happen. So this is going to be, you know, decades down the road, but apparently not.
No, not at all.
The type of radar that the cars used, the article says, it'll recognize a policeman standing in the road holding his hand up to stop, you know. It'll recognize hand signals from authority figures.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, it was several years ago that, you know, face recognition was good enough on entertainment consoles to be able to recognize one person from another. It's silly to think that, you know, with a lot of computing power that recognition couldn't be much better for things that aren't so intricate as faces, that are things like lines and signs and hands.
At what point are we going to get comfortable with, so we spend half the show talking about hackers and exploits and things, and are we going to be comfortable with turning the operation of these automobiles that now can travel 80 miles an hour down the interstate over to a piece of technology?
Here's how. Because it's already, I mean, as soon as it goes from off to on, it will be safer than an actual human. Just, it will absolutely, just running the numbers, will be safer than the crazy person trying to eat an Egg McMuffin while texting and yelling
certainly
at their kid.
Certainly with the texting nowadays,
it's
yeah.
just going to be safer. It's probably safer now. Nobody just wants to admit it.
You know, I think the generic driving of a car, is so easy that we do it automatically just by default these days. And to make a computer do it is going to be very easy. I mean, we've already set things up with lane markers and the fact that stop signs are a specific shape and color. I mean, all that stuff is going to be very easy to compute.
GPS is down to, what, 3 feet or less?
Right, right.
And that's for
so that
commercial?
Part's easy. But what I think is going to be the hard part is when there's a car that's driving itself and there is a, let's say there's an accident directly in front of it, and the car knows that it has zero chance of avoiding that accident if it continues to drive straight forward. So it's not going to only brake. Its options are either to go left into the fast-moving traffic or go right onto the sidewalk where there's three kids playing. When that car has to make a decision between those three options, that's going to be the hard part.
Don't you think that that's when the person takes over? I mean, I
how,
think
how
at
fast
first,
can a person react to take over, though?
True. Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, but you know,
I'm sleeping if the car's driving itself.
Sure. I mean, I think there's
if
going
it
to
is,
be.
As they say,
I'm totally
it's
sleeping.
To be, yeah.
I think there's going to be. Well, you know what I think is the car's not going to let you sleep. The car recognizes you sleep. It pulls over and says, "All right, when you're ready, we can
sure.
get going." I think that's what's really going to happen.
But
like,
is it gonna
you're
going
to have a conscious, active person. Now, that's not meaning – I don't think they're going to say that you can't text or you can't – well, then I might as well drive then.
Right.
But, I mean, I think you have to be able to take the wheel at any time. I mean, this is just what I think is going to happen. I don't know this for sure. But, you know, I think those are the decisions that the computer is not going to make for 20, 30 years.
But when you have a decision that's that imminent, that, A, you're not going to be able to stop for whatever in front of you and you need to go one direction or the other. Maybe it's a deer.
Well,
maybe
and I think the computer decides and it's a blended decision. Like, you take the wheel and the car goes, okay, well, this person has made the decision. I'm good to go. But if you freeze and don't do anything, the car's going to do something.
It's going to have to do something.
Yeah.
Well, there's already the brake-assisted technology in cars right now. Mm-hmm. It sees a ball, you know, going or kid darting out in front of the car. It slows down and mm-hmm.
But don't
reacts.
You think that there's, you know, you put us this scenario, which obviously could happen.
Sure.
But don't you think the car is going to see more of that than the person would as that happens? Like they see a car shimmy up front,
sure.
you know, half a mile, which is the car, the computer is going to be able to see farther than you if they set it up right. You know, it's the car's going to be like, I don't know about that. Whereas the moron trying to, you know, get.
Oh, I definitely think the particular scenario is not something you're going to run into every day.
Sure,
Or even in your particular lifetime.
Growing
but,
pains, the stuff's
right.
going to happen.
What I hope doesn't happen is it doesn't end up driving over the sidewalk where there's a kid and his
sure.
dog walking along or
well,
something.
Well, the Asimov thing will come into play where it's
yeah.
like, okay, people over there, stuff over here, one person, three people, it's
right.
going to make
right.
the decision.
Exactly.
But here's the deal.
Yeah,
I still
intense.
Think in the final analysis, it's going to wind. You're going to be able to run the numbers, and it's going to be like, oh, okay, this is bad that it ran over this person or hurt this person or these many deaths happen. But look at how many deaths haven't happened because of this technology. You're going to be able to look at the numbers and say car assisted deaths are this, and you know, 78 Pontiacs and below that don't have this. No offense to Pontiac there. there are this many more. I think the numbers are going to make it obvious.
So speaking
in
of
the same way that seat belts are, nobody would say
sure.
you seat belts are unsafe because they are. There are
right.
cases where seat belts bad, but nobody can dispute the fact that they've saved more lives than they haven't.
So John? Speaking of car technology, I wanted to segue into you were telling us about a product that I've seen before and kind of was intrigued by, but never have sprung for it, called Automatic. You want to tell us about it?
Yeah, I picked it up because it wound up being on sale for like one day for a good deal. Automatic is this little device that plugs into basically anything from 1996 on has a data port that's usually underneath your dash that the service departments use to diagnose computer problems or
they call it a diagnostic port OBD2.
Yep. And it's sitting under your dash and doesn't do anything. So this company created a device that plugs into that that then communicates with your phone when you get into your car via Bluetooth to give you information like, hey, that dashboard light, this is what that means. It means that your tires are low, your gas tank is half full, or you can figure out if your gas tank is half full when you're in work, or say you automatically start your car and you have very little gas left, but you didn't remember that. Your phone will tell you that. One of the best features, I think, is if you get in an accident, it will ask you, are you okay? And if you don't answer, it will contact the authorities, and it will contact, one, two, or three people on your list, like your wife, and say, hey, Joel was in an accident again. it won't be. But anyway, so it does these really awesome things. It's $99 retail. It's kind of one person, one car.
Sure.
And it just kind of works in the background. It also saves you money because it tracks your habits and says, hey, you accelerate entirely too fast most of the time.
It says here you can improve your driving or be a coach.
Yeah, and it has these little coaching beeps. Like if you slam on the brakes, it goes ding, 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 ding. Like, no, don't slam on the brakes. It's like, oh, I can tell your wife's driving now because it's much safer. It does things like that.
And, this is the idea of that little device that who is it, Flo from Progressive, wants to put in your car and lower your insurance.
Then you get discounts if you drive
well. Except for this is a real deal.
Now we're reaching back into our previous conversation about how much information do you want everybody knowing about you, because that's what it's going to tell you. It's going to have GPS and where your car was.
Although this doesn't have GPS in and of itself.
If your vehicle has GPS, that information's available through,
of course, yes,
through the OBD2 port. Because I have one of those too. Mine's called Torque, and it's available mostly for the telemetry on the car. And because cars now have sensors on pitch and yaw and how fast you're cornering and the G forces and that sort of stuff.
Do you drive a Formula One car? Or do you got like a car like the regular people? Yeah,
it's
like
just
us?
A regular car. Okay. But there's a lot of computers in it.
Yeah, there's all these things are built into almost every new car. You just don't know about them.
Right. And mostly because a lot of it is done for stability control. Because if the car starts to twist too much or turn too much and it thinks it should be going in a different direction,
it adjusts.
It allows it to apply braking.
And the funny thing is, cars have done that since the 70s. Literally, since the 70s, you could buy a Cadillac that would adjust the height. If your car was leaning to the right, you could hear it go zzzz. Yeah. But now it's all digital and controlled by a computer rather than controlled by, mercury. But it's the same idea.
But so do you want Flo knowing everywhere you've been, every stoplight that you've accelerated just a little too fast from?
Totally.
That sort of stuff. But on the good side, you get to save $13 a month.
Sure. I think this is all a stopgap until our car drives itself. That's what I think.
I think that's the general question.
Right.
You exchange, when we use these apps for free often, we exchange data for the service.
Well, at least in the case of the module from the insurance company, you're getting something back from it.
Just to be fair, that's not a real deal right now. The module from your insurance company, as far as I know, is not a real
thing. The Flow thing?
That's not a real thing, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Where have I been?
I think President, what's his name, from 24, his company, too. Progressive, they do that, too.
Huh. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
Sign me up for it.
Here's my problem.
Mine's full. Can you get a splitter for that port?
You probably can. And so people are going to probably start hacking the data that you send your insurance. I don't know.
Of course.
But so here's my problem with the driving car right now, and it's the same as with this. At what point is there some vulnerability or hack or whatever that happens? So the DA, the Department of Homeland Security, just warned there's a drug infusion pump company that Hospira that contains serious and exploitable vulnerabilities. People can very easily take over these drug pumps that people are using and, more medicine, less medicine, make it malfunction.
Well, here's the deal. Those things are important. I don't mean to downplay those. Like, that isn't a really important thing. I doubt there's a lot of people out going, the nefarious thing I want to do is go and get somebody's drug pump and just monkey with it. I'm sure there's someone out there. But finding the vulnerabilities is the main part of that. I doubt that there's been any problems with it. Same thing with the data on your car. Yes, it is possible. Yes, it should be protected. The awesome part is there are people working on that right now. We're in the gap where there are more exploits than there are ways to protect them. Those are going to get worked out because the benefits completely outweigh the downsides. The fact that you sit in front of a computer with a web browser proves that.
All right. And my final point on the whole technology and car thing is, so there's a movement to purchase vehicles before 1996 or whatever you were talking about with the data ports.
96.
So that are just easily work by the hobbyists at home. You can work on them. You can get into the engine and see what's going on and do things a lot easier. So there's now I don't want to call it a movement, but just as much as do it yourself or whatever.
If you're a gearhead, there's more you can actually work on. Sure.
And it's just people trying to get away from before automatic locks and Bluetooth integration of this. And so all these things that can go wrong. And I imagine airbags. That's a pretty serious concern with the airbag company shooting shards of whatever.
Again, very important, should be taken care of. Pretty unprovable that airbags are worse than not airbags. I think there's lots of data showing there are more people have been saved by airbags than have been hurt by them. Doesn't make it not important. You know, they have a whole country for people like that. It's called Cuba, where you can't buy a new car anywhere, at least not yet. And they have lots of old cars you can work on. That's a good place for people that are scared of the computer cars. You can't even get internet there for the most part. Maybe that's...
You can now go to Cuba in Airbnb. I saw that this week.
Yes. And
so there you go.
Maybe not even the last place on Earth.
Unspoiled. That would be wonderful.
There you go.
I think I'll start planning my trip right now.
So tell us about this before we run out of time. Your band or this
watch band.
Watch thing that you're all excited
about. Leatherman, the people that make the cool tools, the multifunction tools and things, they make a bracelet now.
Not yet. It doesn't come out for like 6 months.
Okay. Well, there's pictures of it.
Yep.
And you can go on the webpage and you can see the different links that this bracelet is made up of. And those are the functions of the so one's got a screwdriver, one's got a thing for removing SIM cards out of phones and
take apart the bracelet. They're all tools.
They're all tools. And I don't even know if you need to take it apart. You just need to move the tool out in certain cases or whatever.
Picture, I mean, it looks like a watch, like a watch band.
So it is a watch band, and there actually are pictures of it with actual watches adhered to it at somehow or some point, which is why I said, God, if you could put an Apple Watch on one of these things,
somebody will be able to.
That would be
problem.
I don't know. I would
you
have
get
to
tech and ultimate you get your watch. Off, you get your online, your offline,
yeah.
I love it. You'll have all these survival tools and a watch that people can track you with.
You can fix things with, that's
or it'll
the thing.
Die because you didn't charge
it.
Yeah,
you can use your watch to watch the YouTube videos on how to fix something.
And then you've got the stuff
on your watch to do it.
To fix it.
I love it.
Because, gosh, pockets have become so annoying. Who could carry a leather?
Those two things seem like they just don't go together. One's very blue collar, one's very white collar.
I don't know. I want both.
I absolutely. Yeah, it's a bracelet, right? I mean,
it's almost a
fashion
bracelet.
Accessory.
Yes,
I'm going to use the app on my
iWatch. It's beautiful.
Accessory for the.
So you could have one on each arm, just as a fashion statement.
You could have the stainless on one arm. You'd have the black version.
That is
on the
definitely
other.
For the lumber sexual.
See, and
crowd.
I'm going to use the app on my Apple Watch to page you to come fix something.
Right. I need a screwdriver.
Yeah. Anyway,
Cool.
I just said
if you've ever had a Leatherman, you can fix a lot
absolutely.
Of things.
Yeah,
and
totally.
This is just
so
a bracelet.
Is it on the website?
I've got a link on the Facebook page right now.
Tell people where to go.
Check it out.
Tell them where to go right now.
All right, facebook.com/techradio. Or, of course, you can just Google it or bang it or do whatever you want. But we'd appreciate it if you would go to the website. Tech Radio is on Facebook, facebook.com/techradio. Thanks, guys, for the show today. Again, a big reminder, the next show, we're going to talk about improving that. If you get us off the air, television, SDPB 1, 2, and 3, how to enhance that and the other things that you can use to watch as entertainment or news or whatever on your television set. That's all coming up in 2 weeks, April 17th, with these folks right here on SDPB Radio. Have a great Easter weekend, everybody.